You are listening to Room 1 Coaching. Room 1 Coaching serves amazing surgeons and humans at large through powerful coaching that challenges default neural pathways. We create and hold space for self-compassion and curiosity. We transform lives by meeting ourselves where we are and with intentional thinking, feeling, and doing, which create results beyond one's wildest dreams. Learn more at room1coaching.com. Hey surgeons, welcome back. This is Kelly and I'm so excited today to talk with Dr. Laura Fortner, who's an OB-GYN and an LCS coach who specializes in medical malpractice lawsuits. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Kelly. I'm super honored to be here.
I think Amy Vertrees hooked us up.
Yes. I met Amy virtually at one of the physician things that we had.
Oh, that's awesome. When did you get LCS certified?
So I was certified in July.
Nice. And what brought you to the getting, because it's one thing to be coached, but then it's another thing to become a coach. Can you tell us kind of your whole journey in that and how it ties in with you and your experiences of being OB-GYN?
Yeah. So, so as an OBGYN, I've been practicing for 21 years, and about 8 years ago, I was hit with a medical malpractice lawsuit. Devastated me, went through all the emotions. I think we all get anger, frustration, fear, of what it would do to my career, you know, the whole gamut, shame, embarrassment, all those things. And I actually was on a journey of healing and trying to heal myself from what was happening with this lawsuit. And while I can't talk about the details of the case because it is still ongoing, I have been through probably every gamut of a lawsuit that could happen, from dismissal to trial to appeal after appeal. And so that deeply affected me. And I was on a journey to really help heal my soul from what was going on. And I think one of the problems that we face as physicians is, you know, we sacrifice so much that we mix up who we are with what we do. And when something like this happens to us, we deeply have wounds that are really hard to get over. And so that's how I found coaching. I went and actually started getting coached myself to heal. And then I decided to become a coach, not because I was initially going to start the business, but actually just to get really good at self-coaching so that I could have the tools in my own pocket that I could, when I had a trigger, when the lawsuit was coming up, when, you know, something made me think about it, right? That I could equip myself to, you know, get, as we will say, maybe get over it. Like, I know that as physicians, a lot of people will tell us this, you know, when something like this happens, oh, just get over it. It's all about money, those kind of things. It doesn't work unless you know how to overcome it yourself. And I think that the tools that we learn in coaching were so valuable. So while I was going through the coach certification, I woke up one day about 3 months in and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do this. I have to help other people. This has helped me so much. It has made me a different person, the coaching has. And from once a physician that was, you know, I wasn't as confident after this lawsuit, right? I wasn't as confident. I played some defensive medicine. You know, I was sometimes over obsessing about diagnoses and doing the right thing and all those things that come with it, to being back to my self-assured self and having joy and purpose again in medicine, which I didn't think was possible. And so the coaching just healed me. And I just have so much passion now to be able to help other physicians going through the same thing, because there's no resources. We have nothing out there for us. All we're told when this starts for us is don't talk about it. And that, we could talk more about that, Kelly, but that's kind of my journey. And that's why I decided to do this. And I'm super passionate about it. My clients right now are just incredibly making so much progress with it. So it's so exciting to see.
That's amazing. Yeah. Your story is very similar to mine of like, I never was like, I'm going to be a coach. Like that was not even on my radar. It was more like, how do they do the magic, right? Like I wanted to find out how the magic tricks worked of like the awareness and seeing your mind and questioning your thoughts and loving yourself through it. And I just have to say, like, the process, like, yeah, I'm a coach, but I'm like, I know the awareness of the mind and the power of the thoughts over your body and your life. I'm like, totally worth it. So yeah, my journey was similar. It wasn't like, I want to be a coach and have a business. It was like, I want to know how the magic tricks work.
Yeah. The brain science, right? Like I was so intrigued about how I could control how I was feeling.
Yeah.
Right. We blame the circumstance. We blame our lawsuit for our anger, our frustration, our, embarrassment, shame, and all of that. And we can really control it with the tools that we teach. So
totally. And I think there'll be people listening to this podcast on the full spectrum of like coaching cynic, coaching skeptic, or just novice of like, what is coaching, to like people who are actively being coached, and then to people that are being coaches. So every time we get into like our coaching speak, we'll try to like bring it back for the people in the back. So tell me, what phase do doctors usually find you? Like, are they finding you in like the pit of despair, or do you think it'll be like, do you want the culture to change so that they're going to find you at like the beginning of a lawsuit in the future? Because people will know this is an essential tool. Like, where do you see doctors right now?
Yeah, right now, I actually have seen the full gamut. But most often it's in the pit while they're dealing with the medical malpractice case. I do feel like in the future, I want it to be the mainstay of like, hey, this just happened. You just got served. You should go and have this resource now, which is not happening. They're in the despair, or they're sort of on the other end, but they can't, they've lost their joy of medicine. They want to quit. They're thinking, gosh, they don't belong, those kind of things. And so I'm really in the middle to tail end right now of where they're finding me. And I do think it needs to be pushed back to the very front, because we could actually help, prevent physician suicide. I really believe that by doing that in the front end, and actually having better outcomes in terms of cases like deposition, how we conduct ourselves in deposition, how we go about the trial, like those kind of things can be so beneficial if they knew the tools and learn the tools that we have. And by the way, too, Kelly, like for those that believe this is foo-foo stuff, like I too thought the same thing. Like, this is why it took me literally 7 years to find this. I mean, I got sued 8 years ago. It took me 7 years to find this, because I, like you all that are skeptics, was skeptical too, thinking I needed to go to the right channels and, do psychologists or I did EMDR. I did all these things. So, and I'm just here to say that this works.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think it's really important for people to hear. Like, I'm always saying that of like, I am the skeptic, I'm the resistor, I'm the challenger, right? Like, I did not come into it, but I had my undergrad was neuroscience. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to come full circle to be like, oh yeah, it's the brain. It's the brain. And we're just harnessing knowledge of the brain and ancient wisdom, I think too. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about isolation, because I think isolation from the pack and the group within physicians is a really wound causing part of being sued, of like, we're alone, we're not supposed to talk about it. Only good doctors don't get sued. I don't know anybody who's gotten sued because we're not allowed to talk about it. Like, that really, that isolation is so damaging. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it is so damaging. The culture of medicine, it's so taboo, right? And your lawyers, the very first things out of their mouths when this happens and you get served, will tell you, don't talk about it. And what they really mean, which is what needs to be said, is you cannot talk about the details of the case, but you can talk about your emotions, what you're going through, and how it's making you feel. I mean, you can do that. And I think the biggest thing is avoiding isolation, the very thing that happens to us, because we're ashamed, we're embarrassed, we're walking around thinking, oh my gosh, do my colleagues know? I don't want them to know, right? So I don't want to say anything, right? But then that just isolates us even further. And the funny thing is, here's the stats. If you're in a high-risk specialty, especially surgeons, you have, by the age of 65, 99% chance you will be sued. That's the facts. And by the age of 45, it's, I believe, like 75 to 80%. So it's gonna happen. And this is why I am super passionate about creating sort of like, I don't know, a Me Too movement of like, listen, this is normal. This is normal. This will happen, and help set us up for success and help us be able to have, you know, be around support peers that are going through the same thing. There's no resource out there like that. And I'm trying to establish that right now, because it's just, I spent 7 years searching, isolated, feeling alone, feeling I didn't belong, feeling, you know, like ashamed. Mm-hmm. And that shame can eat you alive and really suck the joy and purpose out of your life. And the culture of medicine perpetuates that. So it's something that we need to fight back for that and stand up for ourselves and be able to say, hey, you know what? This is normal. This happens to us as physicians. And even when most of the time, because here's the thing, you guys, most of the time there was no medical negligence. We did the things, you know, we bent over backwards. We did standard of care. That's most of us. And even if there was a mistake, we're human, right? I mean, mistakes happen too. And it doesn't mean that the outcome was caused by that mistake either, right? Like you, like, so the thing is, I think being around a peer group that are going through it at the same time and doing this, you know, feeling the same way that you're feeling can help physicians heal, actually. Mm-hmm. And it is said, you know, the healing process is just, if you can bear witness to what you're going through in front of a compassionate person that's been through the same thing, that can just give you healing. So yeah. I think isolation is a huge problem in medicine. And I think we need to create change for that.
Can you talk too, because I think most people understand it, but how a lawsuit can then affect your partnered relationship with your spouse. Mm. It can affect the health and your ability to want to like be out in the world. Like it kind of trickles outside of your job too.
It does. And actually it invades every space of your life, because it will, you know, and not only just in your coworker setting, but the stats are there's increased rates of divorce, affairs, going down a deep, dark place that you have never been, personality changes, suicidal ideation and suicide. And so it trickles everywhere in your life, not just in your entity of your office, but your office stat. It is found that your office stat will notice changes in you. Your spouse will notice changes in you. And oftentimes because of the way we're trained. So we're the extreme beings of saying we're fine when we're not fine. Right?
Yep.
And we're supposed to repress all of our feelings. We're not supposed to feel. We're just supposed to get back up and be able to cope for the next thing. And that's how we're trained. And so when we try to do this, when this happens to us and we try to do this in our personal life, it just backfires. It just takes us down a deep road of creating those emotions even more, that shame, that anger, the frustration, the feeling of loneliness, the negative self-concept that you will have about yourself, the beating of yourself up constantly. And one of the things I teach, I think that's super powerful, is how to learn how to be self-compassionate, because that's one of the biggest problems that we have as physicians. We are not self-compassionate with ourselves at all. But I have to tell you this story. I heard this one surgeon who actually wore a diaper during surgery because they had a GI issue and they couldn't leave. They had to still come in and operate, right? Even though they're sick and ailing, like, doesn't this happen in the surgery world?
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think in the urology, as far as like the rate of being sued, urology is twice in a career.
Mm.
And so that almost just normalizes, like, get ready for one because there's going to be two. I think all surgeons are pretty darn high. And it's this belief that good doctors don't get sued. So then therefore I must not be a good doctor if I did get sued. And it's almost this like emperor's not wearing any clothes sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Of like, we aren't perfect. We are going to get sued. And then we have this big like resistance to it of like, but we shouldn't, and we should be perfect. And it's like, almost like, do we see what's actually happening here?
Yeah, it's so true. And you know, I think we all come out of residency being infallible, like, oh, no one's ever going to sue me because I'm good. I know what I'm doing. I follow standard of care. Like, you do all the right things, but you guys, stuff happens even when you do all the right things. And that this whole process of us. So what we do in our minds is we argue with reality. right? We're arguing that this shouldn't be happening to us. I had one of my clients tell me, I went into a lower specialty not to get sued. This shouldn't be happening to me, right? So it's one of those things where when you argue with reality and you continue doing that, overcoming it, you know, is really hard for you. And most of us sit and spin in that place for years, even, because the average time a malpractice case goes to fruition is 4.7 years.
Yeah. And you can't make it, you can't just get rid of it, right? Like it, you're not in control of that timeline.
Right. Right. You're not in control. And it becomes very frustrating to us, because I also think that we're human beings that think that we have control over everything. And then now this is something that we have no control over, but we do. The reality is, you guys, we do have control over it with our thoughts, to create what we want in our lives and how we feel. And I know many of you might not understand what Kelly and I are talking about, but getting the tools and the brain science behind that and how to do that is really the way to overcome this.
Let's talk a second about litigation stress. So litigation stress, you have written on your website, the negative physical and psychological reactions to being involved in a legal action. Most common reactions are anger, fear, shame, isolation, and self-doubt.
Yes. Oh,
I mean, it sounds so horrible. Of course we want to avoid this.
Right, right. So 95% of us experience this when we get served. So I remember getting served. I was served twice, same case, because it got dismissed first time. But it was around the holidays, and my kids were beside me at the door when the sheriff came to serve me papers at my home. And this is what lawyers do. They do tactics like this because they play on our emotions.
So that's purposefully done to intimidate.
Absolutely. Purposely done to intimidate us. And it can be done in the office too. So then the whole office knows, right? By the time you get served from the sheriff, the whole office knows what's going on. It's such a play that they do. And I think right there in that moment, you could say all of us will experience those anger, shame, embarrassment, self-doubt. Like, I remember after this happened to me, I shut the door. My kids were littler, you know, and I tried to get them arranged, and I went in my bedroom and I sobbed. I sobbed. I mean, I didn't uncontrollably of like, you know, oh my goodness. And when you look at the language of the papers that are served, it is really disheartening. Negligence, you know, you committed this, like, it's almost like you feel like you were a murderer. Not that if the patient died or not, it doesn't really matter. The language in that document is so disempowering. It just makes you feel as if you think, gosh, this is the end of my world. Like, oh my gosh. I call it on my website, like, life after death, because you do feel like you could almost die through this process of what's happening to you. Mm-hmm. So litigation stress is real. And the thing about litigation stress is it's just these emotions that come up and we don't know how to handle them. Now, many of us, because of our training, we can repress them for quite some time and be able to move through our life, right? But many times what happens is this litigation stress, if we let it go untouched and we don't heal from some of this, it can develop into what's called medical malpractice stress syndrome, which is in the DSM. This is an entity of depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation of physicians when this happens. And this is when it tips over the scale of really affecting everything that you're doing and that your coping mechanisms are not there at all. So I think that, you know, getting coached in between these two entities can be saving for anybody. I mean, it's just such a thing that we can catch. It is sort of a progression, if you'll say, from those two entities.
Totally. And I want to pause on these feelings. It's so important for people to understand. It's not that we shouldn't feel these bad things. Anybody would feel these bad things when a sheriff shows up at your house and you've got papers that say you were negligent or whatever it might be. it's not the feeling them that's bad. It's the unresolved and just kind of unprocessing them. Would that be how you explain it? Is like you carry them because you're like resisting them. You just want them to go away instead of like processing them, looking at them kind of objectively to kind of help get through them. Am I saying that well enough?
Yeah. And what it is really separating out the circumstances and facts to really the story that you're telling yourself, because we are telling ourselves, most of us, oh my gosh, we're a bad doctor. We did something wrong. Even if we didn't do anything wrong, we blame ourselves. It's that beating up of ourselves and how we're talking to ourselves and the story that we're making this lawsuit mean, right? Yeah. And it's separating those two things out so that we're able to objectively process the emotions. I mean, the emotions are there, you guys, and they're good. Like crying, for instance, can be very healing, right? And processing that emotion of shame and all the things that come up during these things, you want to learn how to do that, because that's how you're going to get onto the other side to have joy and purpose back into medicine.
Yeah, totally. I was thinking, I was sharing with you before we started recording, that recently in one of the urology journals, a young urologist had written about how our training is so arduous so that we can save a life when things are really bad and they're really sick and we know what to do. And then the article ended. And like with my coaching brain now and like being understanding, you know, burnout and all these things, is like, that article shouldn't have ended there. The article should have then said, and now what do we do when we do everything we can do and it still, quote unquote, wasn't enough, right? Or didn't turn out the way we wanted it to, or the patient did have a bad outcome. We get no training in that. We're taught, if you're a good enough doctor, bad things won't happen to you.
Yeah, it's a culture of perfectionism, right?
Yeah.
Like we are so inbred with a culture of perfectionism in medicine, do no harm. Like we can't do no harm, right? And the facts are we're human and we're all flawed. I mean, and even though, I mean, we can all follow the book, do the standard of care, do everything we know in our power, and things still happen that are not going to be predictable, that we don't have control over at the end of the day. I mean, we're talking about human bodies, mm-hmm. right? We are so advanced in this country in terms of medicine, but yet we're not perfect, right? But yet we are held to a standard of perfectionism that I think this is where it perpetuates these thoughts of, I'm not a good doctor, even when you've done everything you could and you've done everything right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always think of that Medicare, for example, says there should be no catheter associated urinary tract infections. Right. To the point of they're not paying for any catheter associated urinary tract infections. And I'm a urologist, so this is my example, but it's like, it's impossible to have zero catheter-associated urinary tract infections. We're like humans and it's warm and there's like bacteria food. Like, so I see that and I'm like, that's how ridiculous our world is you think there should be zero infections in like living things that biologically get infected. And so it's like that part tells us we should be perfect. And then the lawyers of like, they exist to a kind mm-hmm. of profit. They profit off of us. Everybody, even patients, thinking we should be perfect, right?
Yes, yes. And that expectation is just not a standard that any of us as humans can make. I mean, we're just that, but I believe that culture of perfectionism plus the culture of silent, you know, not being able to speak about this really perpetuates this walking around feeling ashamed, isolated, self-doubt, and that we're not good enough, right? And the funny thing is we're walking around this way and there's a lot of other docs walking around the same way and no one's talking about it.
Nobody's
and that needs to change. Yeah.
I love it. I love what you're doing. Do you have advice? Can you give advice to the doctor who's listening who's never been named in a lawsuit? Like, let's say he or she may never, or maybe it's going to be tomorrow or whatever, like they're just never involved in a lawsuit yet. Any advice you can get them as far as just like helping manage their mind, like pre-lawsuit?
Yeah. I think one of the things that I would say to you is prepare for a lawsuit. Like, just know that it actually is normal if you get sued and you're like everybody else. There's nothing. And the thing is, if you don't get sued, good for you. But I would prepare that this is an inevitable thing, because like I said, even if you're a low risk specialty, 75% chance you're going to get sued. I mean, that's just, if you practice till the age of 65, it's just numbers. Yeah. So don't fall into the trap of thinking, oh, it's just not going to happen to me because I'm good physician. We're all good physicians that get sued. All of us. Yeah. So I think that's one thing to prepare yourself with. This is the reality, and not to argue with yourself when it happens. Say, okay, they said that this was going to happen. Here it is. Now, what are the next steps for me so that I don't develop, you know, severe litigation stress to MMSS? You know, what should I do next? And that's kind of how I would start to think about this process, that it's normal.
I love it. I think back to myself when I was, for the first couple of years that I was out in practice, I had an incredible fear and anxiety about getting sued. Huge. And I think it's like you realize you're on your own after residency, right? You're not protected by the attendings anymore. And, you know, time goes on and I learn how to be coached, and then I learn to coach. And I realize all the work I'm doing right now is preparing me for when I get sued. And mm-hmm. so I just want people to think, like, the self-compassion work that you do, the processing feelings, catching when you're fighting with reality, like all of these practices prepare you for, quote unquote, when shit goes down. But like, it's always work we can always benefit from, even when we're not having a lawsuit handed to us.
For sure. I think it's super important, especially with the times right now with COVID, with burnout rates, with all the things that we're dealing with in medicine in general. I mean, gosh, my hospital is the short staff, there's just so much pressure right now, and it seems more intense than it's ever had in my career for whatever reason. And these tools are so useful for every aspect of medicine. You don't have to be going through a medical malpractice lawsuit to go get them. I would encourage you guys to go get them. I mean, it's just so helpful for, and then when impact really hits, you're so well prepared compared to me 7 years or 8 years ago when I had no preparation. I didn't even know how to function or handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you've already got you've almost like prophylactically got your network, right? Of like the people who understand how to talk like this, how to help people, self-compassion, challenging, you know, limiting thoughts. Is like, you've already got your team to like go to when things go bad. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing I'm thinking about is like for the leaders, the department chairs, all the people who are listening, as far mm-hmm. as like knowing this is a resource available for if somebody were to come to you and say, hey, I've been named, just to be like, get on top of the coaching, get on top of the care of the person who is going to go through a whole bunch of stress.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that the first step is, you know, obviously when like as the department chairs or whatever, I think that this is some education that they need to offer to their staff. I mean, in those hospital organizations, I have been doing speaking for different healthcare organizations, family practice, ER docs, all the gamut. And it's important because I'm talking about the actual facts of what happens when this happens, and we could prevent a lot of things from going badly. And one of the things is physicians leaving, right? I mean, it costs an institution quite a lot of money for a physician to leave staff, and that turnover rate costs hospitals a lot, right? And so when, if they're prepared and know that something like this could happen to them, and then they have a resource to reach out to, when they all are equipped with the knowledge, I think education and knowledge is so key. And no one's talking about this. No one's talking about litigation stress. No one's talking about what's going on with medical malpractice. I mean, yes, we're getting risk management, like how to prevent and avoid, but there's nothing when it happens and beyond, right? And so that's what I've been doing. I've been talking to a lot of organizations about this so that they can have the tools and the resources when something like this hits to help prevent turnover, to help prevent burnout, to help prevent all those things that are detriments when suits happen. I think, I don't know if that's what you were asking, Kelly, but that's something that I do offer to go speak so that people understand there's a resource, because people don't know about me either, right?
Right. Yeah, that's amazing. So let's say I go to work tomorrow and I've got somebody there with a big manila envelope and I get served tomorrow. Tips and like thoughts on like when it immediately happens.
Yes.
What do you wish the doctor would know?
Yeah. So obviously the first thing, you guys, when you get served is you want to call your insurance company and your lawyer immediately, or find out who the lawyer is and find out, you know, your next steps. Here's the thing. Like, if you, it's wonderful if you can take a break at that moment and do some sort of breathing, in and out of breathing, and release sort of some emotions that are going to come up, because you're going to have quite a bit of emotional response just by getting served. So I find that that can be super helpful. But then being an advocate for yourself, asking your insurance company when you get on the phone with them, like, listen, what are resources for me to help with myself going through this emotionally? What do you have? But also asking the lawyer, like saying, you know, I know I'm not going to talk about details of this case, but I need to get a peer support group or something going so that I can be the best I can be throughout this process. Right. So those are some things, but I would tell you there is a good sort of relaxation thing that I do, even in, like, I'll get a trigger. So here's what happens. Like, I'll get an email from my lawyer, or a confidential letter on my desk is a big trigger for me, because confidential to me associates lawsuit, when, you know, it could be a patient's records, for goodness sake. Right. But that triggers me, and I'll get palpitations. I'll not want to open it. It, you know, all the stuff, all the emotions go through. And so I kind of breathe in and breathe out. And I say, you know what? I release this resistance, and I'll breathe in and breathe out and just keep saying, I'll release the resistance and I'll open it up and then figure out what it is. But I think that learning some of these techniques, you guys, whether it's a little breathing technique or learning how to be self-compassionate right at the moment that this is happening to you, like, what would you say to a friend? Like, okay, you just got served, right? What would you say to a friend that got served, your colleague that got served right then and there? And I want you to say it to yourself.
Oh, not beautiful.
Yeah. Because you would tell your friend, it's okay, we're going to get through this. Like, you are an awesome doctor. Like, look at all these amazing patients that have, you know, thanked you, right? That's what you would say to a friend. Mm-hmm. So in the moment when you're served, if you're saying to yourself, which most of us are, oh my God, what did I do wrong? I'm awful. I don't belong here. Like, all those negative thoughts, turn them around and decide, I'm going to be a friend to myself right now. And I'm going to say what I would say to a friend. And that's self-compassion. That's learning how to be self-compassionate.
Awesome. Always important work worth doing, no matter where we are, pre, during, or post litigation. Well, thanks so much for joining on this podcast. We're going to do a separate podcast where we've done questions and answers that some surgeons have written into me, knowing we're going to have you as an expert, and we'll do that next time.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kelly.